serve us again. We always get a blessing from his discourses. And today his subject is Isaac's view of the promise. Isaac's view of the promise. Brother Steve.
Thank you, Brother Larry. And before we begin, we'd like to again, as was done earlier this morning, express our love and our appreciation to all of those mothers that are here today with us and those who are in other places, and of course those who have passed on from this life but yet whom we still remember and still love. And we just thought we'd read as a remembrance to these dear ones a few selected verses from the 31st chapter of Proverbs. Who can find a virtuous woman, for her price is far above rubies? Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. A woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. Our subject this morning is, from a substantive standpoint, is nothing new. We're going to be talking about the Abrahamic promise. But the way in which we're going to do this will be perhaps a little different than has been done in the past, and different from how we've presented thoughts in the past. We thought it would be interesting, we wouldn't do this all the time, but in our discourses, but we thought it would be interesting to view the Abrahamic promise through the eyes and through the words of one who lived back in those early days, and in this case, through the eyes and the words of Isaac himself. A number of benefits we personally have derived from doing this, which we'll just share as sort of an introduction. And most of these, I think, we already appreciate, but to me, they were even brought more into the forefront by examining this doctrine through this little bit different viewpoint. First of all, it brought again to my mind the fact that the understanding of the truth and God's plans by his people has been progressive down through the ages of time. It's been much like the scripture that we remember studying last Monday in our opening study of the second volume, that the path of the just is as the shining light that shines more and more unto the perfect day. And remember, that was found in Proverbs, the 4th chapter and the 18th verse. Today we have a greater appreciation of that light, of that truth, than has ever been understood before, because it has shone brighter and brighter unto the day in which we live. Our appreciation is greater than that Isaac and those faithful ones of old had. And we can see how that understanding has progressed down through the ages of time. Also, we noticed in looking at this particular doctrine through the eyes of another, the fact that even in our own lives, even within the lives of God's people, their understanding of God's plan is progressive. You know, Isaac, we will see in our consideration this morning, understood God's plans progressively even in his life. He understood more at the end of his life than he did in the early part of his life. And I think we would say the same. Our understanding of God's truth and of his dealing with us is greater now than it was at the beginning of our walk. And we trust that that will continue to progress until the end of our course. Another benefit we saw in viewing this doctrine from this standpoint, it reinforced to us the fact that Isaac, just as all those other faithful ones of old, and just as ourselves, are human. They were human. Their faith was tried. They made mistakes. They were puzzled at times. They didn't understand everything, nor did they claim to understand everything of God's plans and His dealings with them and with the world. And they had to have faith. Faith and trust in God was a requirement of all of God's faithful ones from all the way back in those very early days of His plans, even until our own day today. Even the Apostle Paul said concerning the church that we too see through a glass darkly or dimly. And then finally, this little different viewpoint of some of God's arrangements caused us to realize something which, again, we already know, but it reinforced it to us, is that any time that we're looking at a particular subject of truth through the eyes of another, whether it be one such as Isaac or our Lord or one of the apostles or even others of our brethren, we must and be able to appreciate and consider the liberty that we each have in the expression of our thoughts on these details of truth. Because we don't all speak the same way. We don't all express ourselves the same way. We have different reasoning capacities, different reasoning powers, and we have different methods of expression. So the expressions that I use, or that you use, or that Isaac used, or that the apostles used, although they're describing the same truth, yet the wording may be a little different. And so we should remember to give one another the liberty and the freedom to express this beautiful truth in the way that seems best to each one. So with that as sort of an introduction, we would like for you to picture in your mind, if you could, Isaac being here with us this morning and sharing with us some of his vision of truth as he understood it in his life, particularly concerning the great promise that had been given first to his father, then to him and to future generations. Although we can't specifically say what Isaac's words might be to us, we would like to suggest that some of what we're about to say might be what he would speak to us this morning. Shalom to all of you. I am a child of promise, a true miracle of God. As you would say in your day today, I'm a miracle baby. I should never have been born. My name in my own native Hebrew tongue is Yitzchak, or in your English tongue, Isaac. I am the son of Abraham and Sarah's old age. I'd like to share with you this morning some thoughts and some remembrances that I have of the greatest promise that has ever been made in the history of mankind, a promise that either has or will affect every man, woman, and child that has ever lived on the earth. Now, this promise you in your day today have termed the Abrahamic promise, although back in our day we preferred to think of it as Jehovah's promise of blessings to all. Now, in those early centuries of man's history, we knew comparatively little concerning the details of God's arrangements. Yet, just as you today have an appreciation of what you call certain dispensational truths meet in due season, we also had an understanding through faith of what was present truth at that time. And you know, we cherished that knowledge, and we held it dear to our hearts, just as you today, here in 1992, should be doing concerning the special harvest truths of your day. Now, initially, our understanding and appreciation of Jehovah's plans centered on two major fundamental doctrines, and that was really all. And by the way, these two fundamentals still hold true down in your day today, some 4,000 years later. First, we saw that man had become a fallen creature and was subject to the penalty of death. Now, this particular fundamental truth had been passed down to us from our fathers. You know, in our day, we all lived a long time. Some lived 600, 700, 800 years. Some lived over 900 years. And so it was possible, compared to, you know, your day today, when you live, you know, 70 or maybe a little bit more, it was possible in our day to get nearly first-hand information about events that had taken place many centuries before. And so in this case, concerning our knowledge of this doctrine of truth, our first parents, particularly Adam, created over 20 centuries before my birth, related the experience of his fall to many generations throughout many centuries, even on down to the generation of Lamech, who was the father of Noah. Because, you see, Adam lived 56 years into Lamech's life, and so could firsthand relate this doctrine to him. Now, Noah, in turn, being the son of Lamech, learning these things, learning this truth from his father, also related these events to future generations, having lived many centuries. And you know, Noah lived into my father Abraham's life 58 years. And so he related these words and these truths firsthand to my own father Abraham. And so you can see that over a period of almost 2,000 years, the truth concerning Adam's fall only had to go through Lamech and Noah to my own father. Word of mouth. Now, in your day, this would not be possible because you live such short lives, but you have something even better than word of mouth. Today, you have the scriptural testimony itself, something that we didn't have. And so you can turn to your scriptures in Genesis, the third chapter, and read about the fall of Adam, where God said to Adam, "Because thou hast hearkened to the voice of thy wife and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life." And further in the context of this, you read that, "For out of the dust of the ground wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return." You also have the scriptural testimony recorded in Ezekiel 18:4, that the soul that sinneth, it shall die. And in Romans 6:23, you have the words of Paul, "The wages of sin is death." And so this was one of really only two fundamental truths that we really had an appreciation of back in those early days. The second truth that we had come to realize and appreciate, although it was not perhaps as clear as the first, we readily realized that somehow, in some way, that if there was to be any remission or cancellation of sin, that this would have to come somehow as the result of shedding of blood. Now, there were some reasons why we had come to this conclusion. First of all, as you remember back to the experience of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, after they had sinned, they tried to cover their nakedness. And you remember how that the Lord replaced the fig leaves that they had made for themselves with skins of animals as their covering. And you know, as we thought about the significance of this, we realized that in order for those skins to have been provided, an animal had to be slain. Blood had to be shed. And this thought stirred in our minds as to just what significance it might have. But this wasn't the only indication that shedding of blood somehow had something to do with remission of sins or covering of sins. Because later on in Abel's life and what happened with his sacrifice being accepted of God as opposed to Cain's, this too reinforced this thought that shedding of blood somehow was acceptable to God. And also in the life of Noah, who after the flood also offered animal sacrifices, the shedding of blood, which was accepted by God as an offering. But that was really as far as our knowledge of this went. And so for many centuries, and even up until my own father, Abraham's lifetime, these two truths were the basis of our faith and the faith of our fathers. And yet, these faithful ones had a strong faith. They believed that God would make provision in some way for remission of sins, and that somehow it would involve blood shedding. But you know, our understanding was to increase on this. The promise made to my father was to be such that would expand our knowledge of his plan almost geometrically from that time forward. So much so that even today, even in your day here, some 4,000 years later, this very promise serves as the basis for your faith and your hope. That's how important it was. We noticed in our learning of God's plan in those early days that he revealed his truth to us in stages. As your prophet Isaiah later wrote, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little. And so it was with the giving of this great promise. It was given a little bit at a time. The first record of this promise given to my father, you have recorded in Genesis, the 12th chapter. And this was when my father was in Haran, after he had left Ur of the Chaldees. This statement of the promise in Genesis 12, verses 1 to 3, read this way. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation. And I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. This was the first statement of the promise. And you know, in this first statement, God emphasized to my father the blessing of Jehovah upon him, and eventually to all families of the earth. And that's really as far as it went at that point. But the promise was reiterated not too long after that. As you have recorded in Genesis chapter 13, verses 14 through 17, the promise is given again, but a little is added to it. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it and the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Here in this second giving of the promise to my father, Jehovah adds two important parts. He starts talking about the land that had been promised to him. And then he mentions a seed. And he says that that seed would be like the dust or the sand of the earth. Now, Jehovah gave my father a third statement of the promise, recorded in Genesis 15, verses 5 and 6. And he expands it once again, just a little bit further. And he brought him forth abroad and said, "Look now toward heaven, and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them." And he said unto him, "So shall thy seed be." And he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. Now this third statement of the promise, the seed is mentioned again, but a different aspect of this seed is mentioned. It is now likened to the stars in the heavens. The promise is again restated a fourth time to my father in Genesis chapter 17. Reading from verses 2 through 8, he says, "And I will make my covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly. And Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, As for me, behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of many nations. Neither shall thy name any more be called Abram, but thy name shall be Abraham. For a father of many nations have I made thee, and I will make thee exceeding fruitful, and I will make nations of thee, and kings shall come out of thee. And I will establish my covenant between me and thee and thy seed after thee in their generations for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee and to thy seed after thee. And I will give unto thee and to thy seed after thee the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God." Now here in this fourth version of the promise, Jehovah emphasized to my father that he would be a father of many nations, and that even kings would come out of him, and that a covenant would be established with him and his seed. Now these statements by God of this great promise took place over about a 24-year period. And you know, these were all prior to my birth. In fact, if you were to read later on in the context of this fourth giving of the promise in Genesis 17, my own birth is actually foretold. But after I was born and began growing into young manhood, my father would relate to me these various statements of the promise that had been given to him. And you know, my father and I would spend many hours discussing and pondering what they all meant. On the one hand, we realized that God evidently was dealing in a special way with us, but yet we wondered at how all of these pieces of the promise would fit together. And how did it all relate to God's plan for his creation? We had many unanswered questions, but yet our faith continued strong in full conviction that God was in control of all of our affairs, and that he would continue to reveal those things to us that were necessary for us to have an appreciation and a knowledge of. It really wasn't till I was a grown young man that God gave to my father and to me an all-encompassing version of this promise, which in a sense seemed to tie many of the pieces together from the four previous statements. And you know, as I look back now, how providential it was that this sort of umbrella statement of his promise or covenant was given immediately following the most severe test of faith in my father's life, and my life too. Now, you all are very familiar with the account, as you have recorded in Genesis chapter 22, in which Jehovah told my father to offer me as a burnt offering in the land of Moriah. And we're not going to go into detail concerning this experience. Obviously, you all are very familiar with it. Obviously, I'm very familiar with it as I was there. Suffice it to say, though, that even though our faith was strong, both my father and I, on many occasions, have admitted to each other that we both had some fear. We both had some trepidation as we approached the climactic moment on the mount. But nevertheless, we have realized, too, that it was the angel of God that had to stay the hand of my father, else I, his only son, would have actually been slain. And so we realize that from God's standpoint, the offering had indeed been made. He counted it as such. And the faith of my father had been fully proven. And so having been fully proven, now the full force of the promise could be given to him. And so it was, as you have recorded in Genesis chapter 22, verses 15 to 18, where we read that the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. Now, quite remarkably, a lot of the pieces began to come together. We now realize, after thinking upon this sort of umbrella promise that was given now, we now realize that it evidently was God's plan to bless all the families of the earth, and that this process would come about through a human seed being offered. We saw that this seed had evidently two parts, pictured as, on the one hand, stars of heaven and sands of the seashore, although we really didn't understand yet just what those meant. Also, by relating the experience that had immediately, or just preceding the giving of the promise, that of my being slain or offered, relating that to the promise itself, we concluded that this human seed would need to be slain, would need to be killed, would need to shed blood in order for any of the blessings to flow out to the families of the earth. And you know, this was in harmony with our previous understanding, but an expanded view that the shedding of blood was necessary for the remission of sins. We had felt that that was the case. Only now we saw that this blood evidently was to be from a human being, one of Adam's own kind, and not from an animal. That these animal offerings were evidently to be pictures and symbols of something better. You know, as we contemplated this expanded appreciation of God's plan, it thrilled us. We rejoiced in it, and our faith was strengthened by it. But you know, we still had a lot of questions. First question we had was, who was going to be the one slain to provide remission? It evidently wasn't going to be me, because my life had been spared. Would it be my son, my son's son, or someone of a future generation? Another question that we pondered was, since the one to be slain would no doubt not be perfect, since no one was perfect, all had fallen. How could an imperfect being offer remission for Father Adam, since he was created perfect? We didn't know the answer to that. Also, what would be the fate of the one to provide such remission? Would they, having died, forever abide in death, forever forfeiting life? And what about all of those who would already be in the grave when this offering would take place? How would they benefit from such a remission if they were already dead? You know, we wondered. We imagined. Is it possible? Could it be part of God's plan? Would it even be within His power to somehow restore one to life who was dead? Such a prospect seemed almost beyond belief. But yet, we couldn't help but ponder such a thought. Now, the two parts of the seed really puzzled us. You know, what was meant by the stars of heaven? What was meant by the sand of the seashore? We really didn't have a clue about that. But even here, we realized that it must have some significance, and that by faith we relied that on the fact that it would be revealed in God's due time. And so we continued to search these things out as the Lord directed us, abiding in our strong faith in God, that His arrangements would continue to unfold in His own way and in His own time. You know, our position was a lot like that which Paul described concerning us ancient ones of old, where he has recorded in Hebrews 11, verse 39, that all of these died in faith, not having received the promise, not having received their fulfillment, but having seen them afar off. But we were persuaded of them and embraced them, and confess that we were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. That was our feeling. We saw these promises and realized that there was some things that yet had to take place down the stream of time. But our faith was strong. You, brethren, here today, some 4,000 years after my lifetime, have been blessed with the answers to the questions that we had concerning the promise. You know that it was the man Christ Jesus who was the one slain for remission of sins, some 40 generations and 2,000 years after the time of my father and myself. You realize that this Jesus was the only begotten Son of God, perfect, transformed into the likeness of flesh, and that as such, He could be both a human being born of Mary, a literal seed of Abraham. He could be both a human being and also be perfect, a true corresponding price for Adam. You also know something that to us was almost like a dream. You know that God does and has exercised His power to raise the dead. What a marvelous truth this is that you now understand. It has been evidenced in the raising of His own Son and has now been promised to all that are in their graves. Through the writings of your Apostle Paul, you have also been able to solve the mystery of the two parts of the seed. You have found that the stars of heaven represent the spiritual phase of this promise, with Christ and His faithful followers as that spiritual seed to be rewarded with a heavenly reward. And you have come to appreciate that the earthly seed, or the sands of the seashore, represents the earthly phase of God's kingdom of righteousness, initially represented by the faithful ones of our day, such as my father and many others, and then expanding out to include and encompass the nation of Israel, God's chosen people, as they will be the first to come in under the benefits of God's blessing. And then this thought of the sands of the earth going out to include all mankind as they come under the blessings and the arrangements of Christ's kingdom. All the sands of the seashore. This grand climax of God's plan and of this promise will hearken back to the first glimpse that was given to my father those many, many years before my birth. And what did it say back in that early giving of the promise? We'll just read it again for your benefit in Genesis chapter 12. It says that I will bless thee, make thy name great, thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. And you see here now how that will come about through the revealment of truth that has come down through the ages of time. You, brethren, here have been given a tremendous privilege, one which we did not have in our day, and that is of being of the stars of heaven class. I would exhort you, fellow Israelites, spiritual Israelites, and beseech you that you make this your sole objective in life, to be faithful to your calling, even unto death. You know, my thoughts and my prayers for each of you, as certainly would have been the prayers of my father Abraham, are very similar to those expressed by your Apostle Paul in Hebrews 11, 39 and 40, and chapter 12, verse 1. Only I'd like to paraphrase these and put them into my own words. And we all, as ancient ones of old, having obtained a good report through faith, did not receive the spiritual part of the promise. God having provided some better thing for you, that we, without you, could not be made perfect. Wherefore, seeing you are compassed about with so great a cloud of faithful witnesses, may each of you lay aside every weight. May each of you lay aside the sin which so easily besets you. And may each of you run with patience the race that is set before you. Now, whether these are actually the words that Isaac would say to us today, I don't know. But perhaps it would give us a little glimpse as to how he would view this great promise that was given first to his father and to him and to future generations all the way down to the present time. And you know how fitting it perhaps is that the Apostle Paul refers to our part of this covenant arrangement, the Sarah feature of this covenant, as the mother of us all, this being Mother's Day. And we're so thankful to the Lord that He has given us this covenant arrangement that we do abide under. And not only for ourselves, but the fact that it will, in God's due time, bless all of the families of the earth. We would ask the Lord to overrule the words that we've spoken, because we don't know if they're exactly what Isaac would have said to us. But we do
desire that it might bring honor and glory to his name. May the Lord add his blessing.
Thank you, Brother Steve. It's very interesting. I often wondered how some of these people in the Bible really did feel about some of their experiences. And I never really realized how close the generations were, how they did receive these things word by word of mouth. So thank you.